Welcome back to the Legacies Podcast, everyone. I'm Sarah, your host, coffee lover, historian, and most importantly, an entrepreneur. In today's episode, we're sitting down with someone that I've admired for many years, Joel Runyon. Joel is a profound athlete who has accomplished record-setting goals and is currently only one of five people in the world to complete an ultramarathon on all seven continents. But that's not it. It all started in 2009. After battling the recession and needing a challenge, Joel launched the Impossible List to challenge his mind and body in order to reach greater lengths, and now he challenges all of us to do the same. Since then, Joel has launched several businesses under the Impossible brand and has made it his mission to raise money for underserved communities around the globe by partnering with organizations like Pencil for Promise. During our conversation, we deep dive into what it means to get comfortable with being uncomfortable in every aspect of our lives, from business to fitness. And like Joel loves to say, get out of your head and into your body for clarity, better health, and to overall live a better life. And today's episode is sponsored by Cooper's Cast Coffee. Imported from around the world, Cooper's brings the adventure right back into your morning brew. From rich chocolate flavors of Sumatra to fresh lemon scents from Ethiopia, you can try them all with Cooper's Single Origin Coffee subscription box to find your favorite. And now, listeners can grab 10% off their first order by heading to coopers.99stclair.com and creating an account. All right, that's it. Let's dive into today's episode with my friend, Joel Runyon. Today is a very special episode for me because I have admired for over 3.5-4 years. I found Joel Runyon on a random website called College Info Geek that I used to follow very heavily as a college student. And I'm so excited for this conversation for y'all. So welcome, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Well, first of all, I didn't know you found me through Thomas, but that's great.
I did.
Thomas is awesome. Things are good. I have a bunch of new things that we're working on for Impossible. We have a couple new videos we recently released. And so, working on getting those things out into the world.
Absolutely. And for people who don't know what Impossible is, I like to explain the Impossible List as basically taking the bucket list and flipping it on its head. So what Joel does and what he's amazing at is he literally says to challenge your mind, challenge your body to the best that you can. So if you're trying to learn how to run a mile, what do you do after that? You want to learn how to run 2 miles or 3 miles. And so by creating an impossible list, you're able to really extend yourself more so. But there are many other elements to Impossible HQ. So if Joel, if you want to kind of give a brief overview of everything that you do and what Impossible HQ is.
Yeah. So Impossible started a long time ago. Seems like too long now, but basically I graduated college and had done all the things you're supposed to do. And I graduated in 2009 in the middle of the recession. And I was like, okay, now the next thing to do is get a job. And I couldn't get hired anywhere. I had like all my first, priority places, my second priority places, my third priority places. Eventually started applying to places like Starbucks, and Starbucks wouldn't call me back. So I was sitting in my parents' basement, like watching Netflix and feeling bad for myself and seeing all of my friends out in the world do things that I wanted to do, travel the world, start their business, be crazy athletes, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do all those things, but I didn't have any actual way to make those happen. And so I felt bad for myself for a while. And then, I kind of was like writing things down that I wanted to do, but I didn't really know how to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I was kind of, going through this list and everything seemed impossible. And all of them really did seem impossible. It was like, I can't quit my job and travel the world. I don't have a job. Mm-hmm. One of my buddies was going to every country in the world, and I was like, I'd love to go anywhere other than Chicago in the cold. And there was one thing on the list that I didn't have an excuse for why I couldn't do, and that was run a triathlon. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an excuse for why I couldn't go outside and run around the block or get on my bike and ride around the block. So I signed up for an indoor triathlon, trained for like 6 weeks to do it, and I finished that race. And when I finished, I thought to myself, you know, you spent so much time telling yourself this was impossible. What else could you do if you decided to train for it and like went after it? And so that basically took, that was the start of the impossible list. And what I talk about with the impossible list is like, you know, a lot of people write that, a lot of people do bucket lists and they get excited about making a bucket list and they write all their things down on their bucket list that they want to do. And then they, that's the highlight of the bucket list is making the bucket list. And most people never actually knock anything off.
Yep.
And so impossible list really starts with like, what can you do right now? Mm-hmm. And for me, that was an indoor triathlon. But then when I finished that, I was like, okay, well, you know, impossible is not a statement. It's a challenge. And mm-hmm. so once I challenged that and I saw I could do more, then I saw, you know, what else could I do? So I started doing more and more triathlons, longer triathlons, tricked myself into liking to run, not liking to run, tricked myself into running. Mm-hmm. And, you know, started doing some marathons, some ultra marathons, getting into this distance game. And basically took that mindset of, you know, like what if you just took impossible as a challenge and just mm-hmm. tried to go do it. And took that into all the other areas of my life and, you know, changed the way I look at how I was trying to go get a job, changed the way to eventually like, you know, starting a side hustle, creating a business, mm-hmm. Creating multiple businesses, and then, you know, kind of having that just seep into the other areas of my life, you know, piece by piece, time by time.
So not only did you challenge yourself to start running and enjoy running, but you also became one of very few people that have run an ultra marathon on all 7 continents. Did you ever think as a, I don't know, a 15-year-old kid that being on every continent was possible?
I wanted to travel. So I always thought that like the running was probably seemed much more daunting to me. I don't think I ran a 5K until I was like 24, maybe 23, something like that. Like I was not a runner. I played basketball growing up. So we did wind sprints and stuff like that. But I did track and field in college cause I wanted, a lot of my friends were on the track and field team, mm-hmm. but, I wasn't fast. So I didn't want to run and I wasn't super strong. So I couldn't throw. Mm-hmm. But they're like, javelin is all technique. And I'm like, I can do technique and I don't have to run. This is great. Perfect. And so I literally threw javelin because I wanted to be on the track team, but I didn't want to do anything involved with running. So until I was 23, 24, there's nothing appealing, mm-hmm. About running. And even when I started doing triathlons, I started triathlons because I didn't know, you know, I didn't think I would enjoy running and I didn't think I enjoyed cycling, but at least it would break the momentum up. Like it would, you know, I'd be bad at different types of things, mm-hmm. Throughout the entire event rather than just doing a marathon where you're just like, you're out there for however long.
Oh, you're out there.
So for me, the idea of like, you know, I said, I tricked myself into running because by the mm-hmm. time you get up to a half Ironman distance, you're running, you know, a half mm-hmm. marathon along with that. So,
right.
That seems, that was much more, of the big daunting challenge that like, I would not have thought I'd be like, oh yeah, let's go places and run for fun. Like that wasn't my concept of, a good time.
Absolutely. So what was it like growing up for you? Did you, obviously with the wanting to travel and kind of tricking yourself into becoming an athlete to be with your friends, what was your environment like growing up with your parents? Were they super supportive of anything you wanted to accomplish? What was your childhood like?
That's psychoanalyze me. growing up was fine. Like I had a pretty normal, like middle-class upbringing in the suburbs of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Parents were super supportive, do the different things I wanted to do. But they also told me that like, I never got like an allowance and I never mm-hmm. got like a lot, some things that kids I think normally got. I think my dad told me at like 12, if I want an allowance, I need to go earn it. Mm-hmm. And so I started like a lawn mowing company at like 12 or 13 with mm-hmm. all of our neighbors. And we ended up growing that to like 20 or 30 lawns at like its peak. And so it just made sense to me that that was like, this is a way better deal. Like I would go out for, you know, several hours on a weekend and make a few $100.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends would be like in a fast food restaurant working. And I was like, this is definitely a better deal. Like I didn't really think about it as entrepreneurship, but like it was just like a no brainer for me. Mm-hmm. And then sports wise, it's just, you know, I got really into basketball. I grew up in Chicago in the '90s.
Mm-hmm. Go Bulls.
Yeah. You're required to, you know, be a Bulls fan and right. like basketball. And so I grew up playing that, played that through, you know, like low level college. I was always, you know, an athlete, but, maybe not the best athlete, but like,
you had the like drive.
I'd outwork you. Right. And even now I say with running, you know, I'm not the fastest guy in the world, but like I'll suffer longer than you can. So, you know, that's kind of that. Mm-hmm. It was a track to like, you know, I think for a long time I had this track where it's like, okay, grow up, go to college, mm-hmm. do that. And college, high school, all grades and all that stuff, tests were easy. Like I didn't really have to try. And I kind of just did this track where you're like, do the things that you're supposed to do and, mm-hmm. You know, figure out how to kind of game. Like I always felt like tests were like an easy system to game. Like mm-hmm. they'd ask you, you know, what the acceleration rate of gravity or something is like that. Mm-hmm. And then they'd give you the answer later on in the test.
Right.
And you just be like, I don't know the answer, but I know that you told me you're going to tell me like two pages. So I'll skip that. And like, I never really thought school was that difficult, but mm-hmm. The idea was, you know, for a long time, just like, okay, this is the script that I'm following. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I graduated school, college, you know, with like a double major and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd done all the things that you're supposed to do. And then the script wasn't working anymore.
Yep.
And that's when I had to like kind of reinvent things and figure them out for myself and figure out, you know, what's working, what's not. And, you know, what do I actually want and how do I go after that?
Absolutely. And I think I grew up very similarly where I grew up in Cleveland. And so I think this like Midwest dream of following quote unquote, like the white picket fence scenario where you get good grades, you do what you're supposed to do. You go to college, you get a corporate job that's going to give you a 401k, you're sustainable, you get married, you have kids. And while I am a first generation college grad, I also similarly to you, I didn't feel fulfilled through that it was like, okay, well, now that I've checked all these boxes, what's left? And when I first found Impossible, I was going through that what is next for me phase because I was so incredibly burnt out from college where it's like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. Like, what is the point of racking up college debt when I can't find a job in the industry that I thought I wanted to be in, but during all of that box checking and comfortability, I wasn't giving myself time to explore and be creative because no one was telling me that that was okay. That wasn't really something built into the model, right? So with your situation and it not really being your choice with the recession and things not working out with career paths, did you at some point kind of connect your childhood of starting that lawn business and realizing like, oh, entrepreneurship is something I actually could do? Or did you think that that was unreachable? What did entrepreneurship look like for you?
So, I mean, there wasn't like some big thought experiment. Basically it came down to, I was trying to get a job and I couldn't get a job and I was trying to get any sort of traction in my life and I couldn't get any traction. And mm-hmm. so, but I realized I was also kind of like disqualifying myself from other scenarios that like are interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So for example, with the triathlons, I was just like, oh, you can't do a triathlon because you don't know anyone who's done a triathlon and you don't even know what sports are involved in a triathlon. So like, why would you do a triathlon? Mm-hmm. And then once I did it, I was like, okay, well there's like boards where you can sign up for triathlons and like you can plot these out and you can get better and you can improve. And so then I basically like it, that unlocked the part of my brain that was kind of holding me back. And then I started looking at my job search like that. I was like, okay, well, like this one is, you know, downtown Chicago and it's going to be like a sales job and it's like going to be a, you know, pain in the butt to handle. And mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be all this hours and, you know, no real upside and you're not even excited about that job.
Exactly.
Or there's this other one that, you could do that's like down in Indianapolis and like, I don't know, you don't know anyone down there, but your sister lives down there. You could sleep on her couch. That's probably not ideal, but like you could hustle. And like, mm-hmm. if you, you know, try to make yourself like, I didn't really have like I didn't know how to present myself as a marketable person then. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, well, you could learn and you'd be working directly with the CEO. And if you did that, then maybe like you'd find some way to be valuable, and figure out some skills and just like you kind of have a job description, but part of the unwritten job description is be like indispensable and figure out how to be, you know, bring as much value as you can. And I don't like vague terms like that, but mm-hmm. like in this case, like in that situation, it was literally just like, I think I had a sales job and I was not like the product we were selling was not like a good product market fit, mm-hmm. but I had to figure out other ways to make myself valuable. And so I just did that. And I just like busted my butt, for like 3 months on like a $250 stipend and like my sister's couch. And then, and whatever sales I made, which were like mm-hmm. almost none. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they're like, okay, well now we'll like give you like a subsidy. I think like $1,500 a month. So you like can actually survive. And then, you know, you're still making commissions on whatever you sell, mm-hmm. and I'm not selling anything. And then after that, they realized like, I was learning so much. I was doing more than they were asking me to, mm-hmm. that I was just, they couldn't afford to let me leave. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't have a position. I didn't apply for a position, but they couldn't let me go. And I started taking that mentality into other things in my life. So I would see other problems that people have. And I was like, okay, well, there's not like an open position here, but there's a problem and there's probably a value that they're going to get out of that. They're going to make money on that. And I could probably help them and then they could pay me for that. Mm-hmm. And so I just started doing that. So I started working on the side for people using some of the stuff I learned at work, trying out new ideas on the side and just like, you know, other people going out partying all the time. I was like coming up with business ideas and working on mm-hmm. stuff. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And I've just taken that type of mentality to everything. I think a lot of people disqualify themselves before they even try. And like, you know, they just kind of submit themselves to the funnel mm-hmm. that like everybody else goes through. And there's really, you know, if you look at things, there's ways to get outside the funnel or get introduced in different ways. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more work. There's not really a roadmap, but you have to think about it. And if you can think strategically about like, how would, if I was that person and I have to go through this list of 200 candidates, like, what am I going to do to like, you know, what am I going to notice? What am I going to see? And then, you know, especially in marketing positions, you should be able to like think that through and be able to present what's useful about you in a new, unique way. And a lot of people don't even do that. They just do exactly, you know, they're all following the script. And if you're all following the script, then, you know, there's going to be like a keyword that, you know, pops to the top of the list or something like that. But there's ways to go around it and build something that's more compelling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with lawn, you know, if you want to bring it back to lawn mowing, like there's nothing really compelling about lawn mowing. It was just like, we just, you know, people had lawns and they needed mowed and mm-hmm. we offered to do it and we were right. good. And we were able to do it super quick. And, you know, they like supporting kids in the neighborhood and we were super aggressive and we got 30 lawns. But you know, there's nothing that was like, that's not like a defensible business model. It was just like a thing that we did.
Right. It's like temporarily fixing a problem and subconsciously knowing what that problem is. And I think a lot of times in small business, especially with clients that I've worked with, is they struggle to just see a problem and fix it. And so I think like at the beginning of your career, even though you were 12, 13, you just saw your neighborhood as something that was needed. And now with Impossible, you're doing the same thing of people who just need to challenge themselves and be kind of that helping hand to give them a roadmap that you've already constructed.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, everybody sees the problem and then they're like, yeah, there's a problem. And you're like, no, well, like the way that you make an interesting life and the way that you build a helpful business is the same methodology. You have to find the obstacle and you have to figure out how to get over the obstacle. And if you're the one that does that, like for yourself, you're going to be able to like do more interesting things that other people didn't do because you're willing to go, you know, do whatever it takes to get over that obstacle. And if you do that in business, then you're the person who gets paid because you're willing to figure out the problem that other people, you know, not just you were having. Exactly. And, if you become that linchpin that solves that problem, you make more money, you have more fun, you do more interesting things. And then if you do it enough, people start asking you, you know, how do you do that? And a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is like, okay, think outside the box, do the, you know, do these specific mm-hmm. tasks or tactics. But a lot of it is also like, just be willing to do the work and just exactly. be willing to like do the hard things that like, there's a reason someone's going to pay you because they don't want to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out how to do that and enjoy it even, that's a pretty good spot for you to be in.
Yep. And I feel like that is the key, I think, to anybody, whether you're starting a passion project or a business, whether, you know, it's okay to not monetize your hobbies, y'all, but that is really the key, is actually doing the work. And once you get through that honeymoon phase of the 2 to 3 weeks of, oh, this idea is so exciting, or it's the most best thing I've ever thought of. Once you get past that and you start looking at, okay, I need to learn financial things. I need to learn how to better time management or learn how to goal set, because that was something that I really didn't know how to do until I started my business. I didn't know what goal setting actually was or how to achieve that and really sit and say, okay, by this date, I'm going to achieve hiring my first person, or I'm going to launch my membership program, or with you, with running an ultra marathon. You know, you don't really know what that process looks like until you're in it. But once you're in it, you have to stick with it or you're not going to find success. And I think with Joel, with one thing that you were able to do kind of early on is really figure out that model and tell that story to inspire others to keep going. And a platform that picked you up to do that was TED Talk. So let's jump back to 2013 and talk about your cold shower theory and how that opportunity came about.
Yeah. So I actually don't know how they got my name, but I was in Chicago and I had talked about, they did a TEDx, new TEDx talk at a Loyola University. And they wanted me to come do a talk. And I originally had a different talk outlined. And it was like one of those things I was trying too hard to make work, and it just wasn't working. So like the day before, I'd pitched them on talk and they're like, yeah, let's do it, like 2 months ahead of time. And then like the day before the talk, I changed the talk and I did the cold shower talk. And cold shower therapy is basically a way to train yourself to be more mentally resilient and become stronger and get used to doing the things that you don't want to do that are actually going to make your life better. Mm-hmm. And the idea is it's a 30-day challenge culture. It's actually picked up quite a bit since 2012 or 2013, whenever I did the talk. And you have people like Wim Hof and a few other people that do like a lot of things around it. But the idea is, you know, a lot of people talk about the physical benefits of it, and I can get on board with that. What I love about cold showers is the mental benefits, mm-hmm. Because the challenge is 30 days, 5 minutes cold shower. Because you're probably already taking a cold shower one way or another. Mm-hmm. And the only difference with a cold shower versus a normal shower, it doesn't take more time. It doesn't, you know, no outlandish requests from, you know, me, but it's instead of turning it like you, instead of doing the thing that you always do, the normal, the simple, the easy, comfortable thing, mm-hmm. and taking a hot shower, you just do the opposite. Mm-hmm. You just do the opposite for 5 minutes. And what happens is when you're about to turn the knob, a bunch of things start bubbling up in your head. You're like, this is stupid. This is going to be uncomfortable. This is cold. I hate Joel. Like, this is dumb. All these different things come up in your head.
Right.
And a lot of people let that stop them. And if you don't, and you turn it to cold, it's going to be really cold for 5 minutes. And it's probably going to be uncomfortable. It's not going to be fun. And you're going to be like swearing at me the whole time. But if you finish it and you get out and you dry off, you're probably going to feel like way more refreshed. You're going to be, you know, proud of yourself that you did it, as small as that seems. And when you dry off, you realize you're not that cold anymore. Like, and it wasn't that bad. And that you just, you know, you almost let just being cold, like the worst case scenario of you taking a cold shower for 5 minutes is that you're cold for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like that's the only thing that can happen. Like there's no one else around. Like there's no external consequences. There's no like big extenuating circumstances that can happen to you. And if you're not willing to be uncomfortable you know, a lot of people say, like, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And they post this crap on Instagram or Pinterest. And it's like, good, the concept's right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not really doing anything by just posting stuff.
Exactly. There's no action to your talk.
But if you take a cold shower, you actually did something first thing in the morning that is like doing the thing that the person you want to be like is doing. Mm-hmm. And you're being uncomfortable. And it's not that cold showers are this big, grandiose thing. It's actually a really, really small thing. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it means that, like, every other step that you take, you start realizing these same voices that almost stopped you from taking a cold shower are the same voices that are stopping you from applying for the job, mm-hmm. for asking for the raise, for doing that new hobby you're scared of, for signing up for the marathon. It's the same voices, and they're the same thing. They're like, this is scary. This is uncomfortable. Why are you doing this? Why are you here? They're always the same voice. And so what cold shower therapy teaches you is that how to recognize that voice, and then also realize it's just a voice. And like, it doesn't actually affect whether or not you can take the cold shower. You're 100% in charge. And if you take the cold shower, you're probably not going to enjoy it, but you're probably going to be glad you did it. And that's pretty much true about every other scary thing where those voices bubble up. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to like enjoy the first 5 seconds of it. Mm-hmm. But once you get past that, you're going to be fine. You're going to get through it. And worst case scenario at the end, it's like you dry off, your bathroom temperature, and everything's back to normal. And nobody's really going to care. The consequences are never as dire as you think they are. So
exactly.
That's cold shower therapy. And I did that talk. It was filmed on a potato, basically. The worst film TEDx talk of all time. And
I don't think it's the worst one. And we're definitely going to post it in the show notes because it's pretty great.
I think the talk is okay. The video of it is horrible, but somehow that video has gotten like 1.1 million views or something like that since. So hopefully it's been helpful to people.
Yeah. And I feel like with the idea of cold showers too, you know, especially right now with where our environment is you're probably going to be in there less than 5 minutes, especially at the beginning. You know, you're using less water, you're waking up quicker. I know for me in the morning, I've had to train myself to get away, quote unquote, from like the warm comfy of waking up. And since becoming a full-time entrepreneur working from home, I take my happy time. I make my nice warm cup of coffee. I stay in my nice warm pajamas for an hour after I get up. But I think by taking a cold shower, you also kickstart your day a lot faster. And also, you know, this idea you were talking about with, you know, taking this idea to your career of getting out of that comfort zone is by jumping in feet first, whether, you know, the temperature is right or not, you actually learn just how much more you know and what you're capable of by just taking those first steps. And someone I saw at South by last year, do you know who Al Humphries is? Have you heard of Al Humphries? So he was the first person to canoe, basically circumnavigate the globe by canoeing. And he is phenomenal. He talked at Pinterest House just about, he calls it micro traveling, I think is the idea. But it's basically having a micro adventure is all it takes is the first step out your front door. You can have an adventure. And I feel like that's really similar to the cold shower theory, that by just taking that one thought of turning the nozzle the other way, you're able to accomplish and achieve so much more. As an entrepreneur, it can get a little overwhelming trying to figure out what equipment and tools are best for your business, especially when you're first starting out. My office space, or apartment cubicle as I like to call it, has become fully equipped with everything I need to launch and grow 99 in St. Clair. And now you can grab all of those things for yourself. From podcast microphones to the coffee I brew that helps me stay focused, we even have Squarespace templates and branding kits to get your business up and running by the end of the week. You'll also find amazing discounts to try out platforms like Canva and Flowdesk in there. Inside the 99 in St. Clair store, we've got everything you need to help your business become a showstopper. So quit wasting time digging through Amazon and Pinterest to figure out what you need. Instead, head on over to www.99stclair.com/shop to start building your creative space today. Joel, can you explain to us when it comes to building an impossible list, what is the best things to include? Because you are an athlete, so your impossible list that everyone can see on your website, it's live updated, is very athletic focused. But what is your advice for someone who maybe wants to try the impossible list that isn't an athlete, but really wants to start challenging themselves in their mind, their career, their personal life?
Yeah. So first of all, I challenge almost everyone that says they're not an athlete that, I think like the founder of Nike has a good quote. He's like, if you have a body, you're an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I think most people need to do at one point or another is to challenge themselves physically. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't necessarily mean you run an ultra marathon, but this is part of the reason why I talk about cold showers, because cold showers, you don't like, people have legitimate reasons for why you can't go out and run a marathon tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? Like there's right. like excuses, like you probably not healthy. You probably could, probably not good for you. You know, when I talk about jumping off of a bridge and going bungee jumping, there's like legitimate reasons why people can't, you know, there's not a bungee jump spot really close by. Mm-hmm. But the thing about cold showers is that cold showers are a physical experience that like everyone can put themselves into. Mm-hmm. And the thing about physical challenges is that it takes you out of your head and puts you into your body. Mm-hmm. And so most people live in their head, especially with, you know, digital media. A lot of people work online. You're almost always, you know, sometimes you write things out, maybe, but a lot of times you're dealing with thoughts and you think people get confused. They think thoughts are reality and thoughts aren't reality. They're just thoughts. And what happens is what physical challenges let you do is they let you see the difference between what your thoughts are and what reality is. And that's what cold shower therapy makes you do. It makes you see how far apart what you think is going to happen is from what actually happens. And so I always say everybody should have something physical, even if that's a, you know, it doesn't have to be a marathon. It could be a 5K. It could be, you know, wherever you start. I started with an indoor triathlon. So if you can somehow start below that, I'd actually be impressed. Like that's how far down I was when mm-hmm. I was starting. And that's why I talk about impossible lists growing over time. It's not mm-hmm. supposed to be this like huge, crazy thing that you're supposed to do. It's like, what's actionable like right now within the next week, mm-hmm. month, 3 months? Like, what can you do right now? And like, it'll grow. If you push yourself, it'll grow. But like, where are you at right now? But I think everybody should have a physical item on it because if just because of what I said before, where it's like, it shows you the difference between what you think is mm-hmm. reality and what is actually reality. Mm-hmm. And the thing that physical hard challenges will show you is that you can do hard things. And just because something is hard or difficult, or you even if it's something's painful, mm-hmm. you can still do it. And a lot of times people, like, even if you just have an uncomfortable thought, you're like, I can't really entertain that. I'm not going to mm-hmm. double down on that. I'm not going to keep thinking about that. But hard physical challenges show you, like, you know, like when I was running 100K in Antarctica, I was like, mm-hmm. I can't keep going, but I did.
Right.
And the difference between what your head wants you to do and what your body can do if you just push it, mm-hmm. Is really, really interesting. I call it doing like a manual override. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I have a couple different things, categories of things to do. You know, for me, and this varies, like this isn't, this isn't set in stone, but I think, you know, most people do really well if they start with this type of framework, is, you know, physical challenges mm-hmm. that are difficult in some way. Mm-hmm. And that could be anything from, you know, a 5K to a Spartan race to an ultra marathon to like, you know, a lot of times people say like, sometimes you just have to take a leap of faith. Like if that's true, then go skydiving. Mm-hmm. Like let's see, like get scared and jump out of a plane and show yourself that you can actually do a literal leap of faith and then go, you know, take that same idea mentality into your job. So mm-hmm. something physical where you're engaging your body is like almost a requirement in right. my opinion. I made it up so I could say it's a requirement. So
yeah, it's your business. You made the rules.
Yeah. So something physical. Then I have a few different things. I have business goals. I have personal goals. I have adventure goals. I think this is really interesting as far as, you know, you mentioned the white picket fence concept of like, mm-hmm. okay, what's, you know, that's the dream that you're sold. I don't know about you, but I love adventure. I love going places. I love
I do too.
part of reason I love ultra marathons is not running. I don't like running. Mm-hmm. I don't like running at all, but I like what running gets me, and I can get to places in the world on foot via, in an ultra marathon that I could never even try to hike to. And I get to explore different parts of the world. And so I put an adventure section in there as well, mm-hmm. for people who want to either just add more adventure to their life on a regular basis, or like it helps kind of power like your own dream. Like maybe you're not pumped about, you know, working in a cubicle or doing, working on a Friday night to, you know, work on your side hustle. But if you have like a dream of your own, that's an adventure focus, or like a, you know, like one of mine is like buy an island. Mm-hmm. Like that's more interesting to me than getting like a really big house.
Right.
And that's more motivating to me. So it's, like having something like that, that's going to push you is super, super helpful in making sure you're actually following through on the stuff that you want to do. A lot of people will self-sabotage themselves because they're working towards a dream that isn't theirs, or that they don't mm-hmm. care about, or is not inspiring to themselves. And so they're like, I don't even really care about that. So that's why I'm like slacking off at work, or like not following through, or not doing the things I said I would. But if you have something you care about, then, you know, it makes it easier to do the hard stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think there's like two more categories, which is like, one's like a miscellaneous, like mm-hmm. be an interesting person, try new interesting things. So it's mm-hmm. like language learning. I've got one on mine that's like stand-up comedy. And it's like, I don't know, like I'm not trying to be a stand-up comedian, but it's like,
why not try it?
And it's scary, and it's like, exactly. Why not go do it? It's a good story, if nothing else. And then the other one, you know, I put this at the top of the list, is stuff to do to give back, mm-hmm. because the idea is you want to, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, we can all complain about all the different things that are going on in our own individual lives, but mm-hmm. When you travel and you have some perspective for how bad life can be and how good relatively we have it. Everybody has hard mm-hmm. stuff, but like we have it pretty good. You start to see like how can you, you know, not just push your limits and, you know, make your, you know, sense of what's impossible like much mm-hmm. bigger, but you're also able to provide opportunities for other people. And when you do that, it actually helps you, you know, from a selfish standpoint, it helps you become more resilient when going through hard stuff, because you realize like in the middle of an ultra marathon, you're like, I can't do this. I got to give up. Like it's hard. It's painful. It's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's real, but it's not impossible. Like you have the opportunity right now to suffer. Like you mm-hmm. get the opportunity to suffer. And a lot of people don't even get the opportunity to choose to do hard stuff. They just mm-hmm. have hard things that are happening all the time. So, so that's the other important piece that I try to put at the top, because that that gives you perspective and grounding to be able to do everything else.
Absolutely. And when I found the impossible list in Thomas's blog post, I was at a place where I was leaving structured learning. And so one thing that you pointed out was really about the challenge, and that you really can do more than you think you can. And I actually, now looking back, I don't think I've ever built an impossible list to truly physically challenge myself. So thinking about the categories, so you said physical, business, personal, adventure, giving back. And mine are pretty similar. I pulled up my impossible list from 2016 this morning to just like relook at it, right? And like where we're at from when I started. And I was not a business owner yet. I really was barely starting my blog. And I know we have listeners who are kind of on that fence too of, do they monetize? Do they start a side hustle, because there's so much pressure to today. So I wanted to go over quickly kind of how I started my impossible list, and hopefully get your okay on approval of if it's an okay impossible list. I started most likely, like I just said, with leaving structured learning. And so things that I was putting on my impossible list were things like reading one book every month and reading a new topic. I had things like I wanted to actually learn about finances as now an adult, to have structure to my finances and know where my money was at, what I was paying for. I also had things like, I want to wake up at 5:30 every day. I want to replace a meal with a juice. I want to make sure that I walk my dog 2 times a week, which they sound very, very minimal. But I think when I was starting it, I was 21, 22. We were talking about just like the everyday checking off the box of what you think you're mm-hmm. supposed to do. And so for me, making sure that I read a book every single day was so important to me just to get away from education and what education being brought to me looked like. But then over time, I started adding adventures. Like I got really into basketball. And so I have on my impossible list to see every NBA team play. That's something on my list that I am trying to accomplish. But seeing them in their home state, seeing them with their fans and what that adventure looks like. Because being from Cleveland and being a Cavs fan and a Browns fan, I don't exactly have a lot of a platform to stand on when it comes to teamwork. But then in learning more about the NBA, I started writing and I was in the music industry, and I actually had in my impossible list to pitch work to writers and to people in the game. And I ended up having my work sent out by Shea Serrano, who happens to work at The Ringer. He's a best-selling artist, or writer, not artist, but his artist for his all of his work. I actually have a limited edition Scottie Pippen piece signed by Arturo right above my head, if you guys are watching the video of this podcast. But so things like that, like I started taking really little steps, and it wasn't until about halfway through last year when I was really going full time with 99 in St. Clair that I realized like I am just sitting way too much. And so my impossible list then started to transition to, well, how can I take steps to get out of my chair, get out of my office chair and just move? And I know that that's not, you know, crazy exciting, but it was a really big deal for me to at least get my muscles going. And now, if y'all are following 99's Instagram or my personal Instagram, you're starting to see content that is surrounded by my 30-day jump rope challenge, which I'm trying to jump rope every day for 10 minutes without stopping. And that is the biggest challenge I've ever taken physically. It is a lot of work. But again, like you said, like it's, you don't really know what your body's capable of. And the first day that I stood up to jump rope, I literally jump rope for 4 minutes straight without stopping. And that was mind blowing to me that for someone who can't run, I have no hand eye coordination, someone who does not enjoy lifting weights, I've now found enjoyment out of something that I only thought Rocky Balboa did.
What, one of the things that you did there, and I think that's actually really helpful for people, is like when you said like read a book every month, it's like that's a really wide open challenge where you're like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, like if you miss 1 month and it's ruined, and it's like, you know, how long do I have to do that? Is that forever? Is mm-hmm. that for a year? Like I love contained challenges because mm-hmm. it doesn't make this overwhelming, never ending thing that you have to do. You're like, I'm reading a book, and you're like, well, you know, it's been 4 years and I only did that like a couple months and I right. feel bad about myself. It doesn't even give you context. And so I love we're starting to do this on a regular basis at Impossible is regular monthly challenges that we do with people. And the idea is that not that like this is going to be your end all be all, but one, we raise your baseline to a certain level. If you're jump roping 10 minutes a day, like that is way better than doing nothing. That's mm-hmm. one of the blog posts I did recently, you know, one is better than zero. And like, it might not seem like a lot, but it's so much better, especially if you're able to string it together consistently. Like if you run 1 mile every day for the next year mm-hmm. And you run zero, you're gonna run 365 more miles if you run 1 mile every single day, and that's like way better than 0 miles. So that's a big thing, containing it to a certain time frame mm-hmm. and then giving yourself permission to be like, you know what, like I gave myself enough time that like I stuck through it when I wanted to quit. Mm-hmm. And then if you did that and you don't like it, you don't have to keep doing it. Like, but what most people think is like, it got hard, and so I'm just not going to do it. And then they quit before they actually even give it a shot. Mm-hmm. Like, everything gets hard if you do it like sufficiently long enough. Like,
exactly.
That's not the question. The question is like, you know, I'll give an example. So like I've done surfing and kite surfing. I've gone surfing enough to know that it's like a lot of work to surf. I don't it's almost too chill for me. I need a little bit more action. It's a little bit boring. I'm not really right. good at it. Right. But I also don't necessarily want to put in the time to be really, really good at it, because I know how much work that would take. But I've been kite surfing, and I'm probably worse at kite surfing. But I have so much fun being bad at kite surfing right. that I'm just like, this is the best.
It's so much more
ever.
Exciting. Exactly.
And so you can give your, like, a lot of times I tell people, most people are so ingrained to only do things that are fun or enjoyable to them. Mm-hmm. And I think in general, people need to realize that they can suck it up a little bit more, and mm-hmm. they're probably tougher than they think they are. But it also doesn't mean just doing stuff that you hate just to be like, you know, to spite yourself. Like, at some point you're going to have to get something out of it. Mm-hmm. And for me with running, like, I don't like running, but I do like what I get out of running. I like the way I feel afterwards. I like the mm-hmm. sense of accomplishment. I like the adventure that's involved. Mm-hmm. And so even though I don't like running, I'm getting something out of it that I do like. And I think more people need to be willing. You need to be able to pick and choose the things that you're willing to undergo difficulty for mm-hmm. That are worth it. And most people, I think, they think they just see difficulty and they're like, I got to give up. Right. And
or they see it as it's so just out of their reach. I think if you look at like Mike Posner, who just ran, he did the cross country run, even though he didn't make it all the way because he got bit by a snake. But people were looking at him online and going, that is phenomenal. Like, I can't believe you're doing that. But it's like, you could also do it. All you have to do is literally leave your front door and you can start running too. And being able to be in that mindset of you are capable, it is possible. You just have to make that mental click that you can literally do what other people you watch online are doing every single day. And I think one thing with the impossible list that I struggled with at the beginning, and I want to say this just because we were talking about it and you brought it back, is, you know, talking about deadlines. I think that a lot of us don't really know what it means to set personal deadlines that have no financial bearing, that have no real true public forward-facing outcomes, right? That it's all internal. And I think a lot of us, then this goes along, this is a great kind of segue because we are in January, is what New Year's resolutions look like. Is if you're not putting those deadlines to it, it starts to fade away and it becomes less and less real. And I was looking back at my original impossible list and going, I didn't put any dates to this. And I feel like for a lot of things I didn't, because I was thinking about it as continuing challenges, I really didn't know, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, do this by this date and I'm going to feel successful on it, where it was rather just like getting comfortable with doing something different every day. And so now as a business owner, and one thing that I shared with Joel and y'all can see on 99's blog is I actually for the first time took the impossible list and turned it for my business. And now I'm setting hard deadlines of by the end of Q1, I'm going to do this. Every week I am going to pay myself, no matter what the amount is, I'm going to do these things. And bringing back that deadline of that challenge back into the impossible list, I think is lit this fire under me that I didn't realize I needed, but I'm very, very thankful for it, because I feel like just in this month of the new year, I've literally accomplished everything that I wanted to do this month and more, because mentally I'm saying I have to be okay if I don't complete this. And what happens if I'm not okay with that?
Have you read Profit First?
I have not. I need to put that on my list.
Profit
First.
That's a good book. If that's the, no, it's really like, it's like pay yourself first.
Yes.
And there's an app called, it's called Astra Finance.
Okay.
And it's like I don't know if you've ever read Ramit Sethi. But he has a book called I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which sounds much
flashier than it is.
Yeah, it's much much scammier than it is. But he just has a whole section on financial automation, uh-huh. And Astra basically gives you the tools to do the things that he says in the book. So instead of just being like, oh, this is like what my finances are, like, let you set up automation rules. So it's like mm-hmm. you don't even have to like you can just set a percentage of whatever, you know, a client pays you, and you're like, I'm gonna take 10%, I'm gonna put it over mm-hmm. here, I'm gonna 10%, put it over here.
Absolutely.
So that's useful if if you need that.
Yeah. Speaking of finances, let's talk really quickly about your giving opportunities with impossible.org. How did that come about? When did you decide that giving back was important for your business?
So I got challenged at one point. I did a marathon and I was like, that's as far as I need to go. I'm good. And then I had a nonprofit reach out to me and they're like, oh, we help build schools in developing countries and we're running this campaign called The Impossible Ones and we'd like you to be a part of it. And would you want to run an ultra marathon? And they gave me like three different ones that I could do. And I was like, no, that's too far. And they're like, but kids. And like, you know, they give you like that, you know.
Yeah, they give you the feel bad, right?
But it's also like, you know, it's kind of what I talked about earlier, where it's like a grounding situation where you're like, okay, yeah, you know, your knees are going to be in pain for what, 6 hours mm-hmm. max?
And there's so much more.
Or you could help people. Like,
right.
You're that selfish. And so it gives you perspective on like how comfortable you think you need to be. And it's like, okay, well, 48 hours max, like you got like a max uncomfortability situation of like 48 hours or 72 hours, and then you're going to be fine. Like mm-hmm. suck it up. So, they challenged me to raise 25 grand and build a school. And, I was like, oh no, like they said you could do 10 or 25. And I was like, oh, what about 10? And they're like, well, what about 25? And I was like, good point. So, you know, it was kind of funny. I was trying to like lower the bar and they kept, you know, pushing me to push it. And that was good. So I ended up doing my first ultra marathon. That was kind of my first foray into ultra marathons. And we raised $26,000. So I had no idea how we were going to do 25 and we raised more. And then I got to see the school and it was super impactful. And I was like, okay, well, how do I take that to the next level? And, you know, like I want to, you know, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. And that was like the most impactful thing that I ever did. So how do I raise the stakes again? And so then I was like, well, what if I ran an ultra marathon on every continent? Instead of just running one, I ran seven. And instead of just building one goal, we built seven. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, let's call that 777. Goal is to build seven schools with them. That's like $175,000. And we ended up raising just shy. I got to see what the number is, but just shy of like 200K. Mm-hmm. We've raised, you know, $250,000 for different charities and supported entrepreneurs through Kiva, and our Kiva lending group has a ton of people on it. And it's one of those things. It's like, you just keep, I like situations that give people a global context, because there's a lot of talk where people want to, get mad at people who have a lot of money, or, you know, like I don't really get into all that, but the idea that like there's all these systems that we don't have control over. And the thing that I always come back to, and the reason that like physical fitness is so important to me, is it's the one realm, like your body, what you do with your body and what you put into your body is like the one thing you can control. And if you're able to take that and take, you know, what your decisions are going to be and be able to help other people specifically and create opportunities for others. Mm-hmm. If you can create more opportunities for yourself and create more opportunities for others, like I think that's like the best thing that you can possibly do. And so, and even though it's counterintuitive, like doing those things for other people does give you the perspective to be like, you know, these problems are like kind of holding me back right now. Like, actually, they're not that big a deal. And like, I could probably just like suck it up for like, it's amazing what you can do if you just like, I'm going to do this week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to follow through and I'm actually going to do the thing I'm going to say I'm going to do. And a lot of people don't even know how to do that. And what happens is that creates a lack of trust in themselves and they don't believe that they're going to follow through on anything they do. And if you fall into that trap, then it just spirals mm-hmm. really quickly because you're not sure that you can trust yourself or what you're going to say you're going to do. And a lot of people ask me when I'm running, like, oh, what happens when you want to quit? Right. Like, cause you're going to get in the middle of a race and it's going to be hard. And I always tell people, it's like, if I started a race, like I've decided I'm going to finish it. Like there's not
right.
like, of course I'm saying in the middle of the race, I'm like, this is tough. This is like, I'm tired. I want to quit. But that's not an option. It's like actually not on the table. And I've literally had conversations with the air. I'm like, I was doing a bike race in Indiana, of all places, and it started where it's like a tornado warning and a bunch of stuff. And like, I think, you know, they're pulling the bikes off the road, but like, right, it's a long enough course. They weren't getting everyone. And I was just like, all right, if you want to rain, go ahead and rain. And then it starts raining, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if you want to hail, go ahead and hail. Starts hail. Okay. If you want to,
everything just being thrown.
Yeah. Everything just keeps coming at you. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to finish this race. Like, you can do whatever you want, weather, but I'm going to finish this race unless I like break my leg. Mm-hmm. So like, good luck. And when you say that, then the rain isn't as much of a pain because you expected it.
Exactly.
Everything else isn't as much of a pain because you expected it. You know, if I did end up breaking my leg, then I'd be like, all right, I guess I'm just not finishing the race. Like, that was the deal. But, you know, most people would be like, I'm tired, you know, like, I guess that's time to go home. And if you really set out, most people, I've said this before, but most people tell you what they want to do, but most people won't tell you what they're willing to give up to go get it. And if you realize that most things have a price and you just have to figure out what you're willing to pay for it, you can go get a lot of things. And so with the original triathlon, it was like, I got to train for a month and I have to like be okay with looking stupid. And I think my mom came in with me to the race. Like, it was that bad. And with everything, there's a price. And it's like, figure out what the price is, be willing to pay for it and make sure it's worth it, and then go do it. And
absolutely,
if people can do that, then they're in a good spot.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's pretty similar to what it's like to run a business. Is you have to create that list of your fears and what could happen. Similarly to your race that you biked, is it's like, it could rain, it could hail, you could not land clients, you could not have any income for 2 months, but what are you going to give up to not have those fears actually come true or not repeat? You know, you have to put in that work in order to finish what you start out to say. And I feel like one way to kind of tackle that is by talking about what you're doing publicly, you know, and if you tell your Facebook friends, or at Thanksgiving, you tell your family, hey, I'm going to start a business. Those people are going to hold you accountable, whether you expect it or not. And whether you're an athlete or a business owner, or you want to start a bakery or whatever, if you start talking about things that you want to accomplish, it makes them so much more real, and it gets you out of your head and into your body in front of people. It gives you more opportunities, and a lot of things can happen. So
even more than that, I would say, put yourself on the line. Don't say like, I want to do this. Be like, I
will do
this race.
Exactly.
I am signed up for this race. I am committed. And if you're talking to your friends, be like, you're coming with me, or something like that. Or if it's a client thing, be like, I am calling 10 people. I do this thing sometimes if I'm trying to do something I really don't want to do, but I want the end result. Is if I don't do the thing that I say I'm going to do, I will, I do a bet with my buddy Vic. I'll be like, I'll give you $200. Like, I owe you $200 if I don't do this by this date. And like, you don't just get to keep the money. You get to give it to the worst person I know, which is Steve. And Steve is terrible. I hate giving money to Steve. And so I sometimes don't want to do a thing, but I've all of a sudden created something that I want to do even less than I, you know, don't want to run or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I will go do the run because I'm not giving Steve money. And so that's like kind of a really kind of nuclear tactic, but I think it works really well because you have to make the actual consequences of not doing your goal worse than like the intermediary consequences of like whatever pain you have to get through to build that new habit or start that new thing. So, I think that's super important. And I probably utilize that too much, but it's, you know, I also know what will make me go do the thing. So
exactly. Well, doing the things, what have you added to your impossible list for this year? What are you focusing on?
So I have a few different things. So I'm trying to scale up impossible. For a long time, it's been a personal thing. And I've been helping people, but I feel like the scale of the brand is it's a lot more potential. And I'd like to kind of reach that potential. So there's a few different things. One, we are trying to do a lot more media. So I've released a couple different trailers and videos and highlights of other athletes, but also I want to make some more inspirational pieces. We did a shoot in Iceland recently, and basically taking a lot of the concepts that I've talked about on the blog and turning them into visual pieces that have a bigger reach than what I can just reach on the blog, because you know, a lot of people find us on the blog, a lot of people find us, you know, through Thomas's site, but even Thomas, like Thomas is what, 1.5 million YouTube subscribers at this point.
He's and grown blog is, amazingly.
Yeah. His blog is not as nearly as big. And right. So we're trying to do a lot more media stuff. Mm-hmm. Personally, I have a couple races I want to do. I have a couple events I would like to host this year that I'm trying to put together the ground pieces for. And then, it just, you know, things that have been on my list for a while that I'm like testing out, like I'm going to go somewhere and kite surf and actually hopefully get good at it this year. And then I've been doing stand-up comedy, which is literally just like speaking practice for me, because I do a lot of speaking engagements and I want to get better at it. And stand-up comedy is probably like the hardest way that you can go about doing that. So I've been doing that for like a couple months would like to, I need to put some sort of like end cap goal. For a long time, it was just like go up, and then I started doing that. And now it's like, okay, let's like either, you know, create something out of it or, or do something. So
exactly. Yeah. I love that. And if y'all want to learn how to create your own impossible list, or if you want to get involved with Impossible overall with giving, we'll put all of those links down in the show notes for y'all. I heavily recommend, if you have not tried the Impossible list, if this is a new concept to y'all, please put one together. Make sure that you send and tag Joel and I in it, because we want to help you succeed any way that we can. And Joel, thank you so much for joining the Legacies today.
Just check out ImpossibleHQ.com. We have a brand new site up. And then we have a trailer called Welcome to Impossible, which would be awesome if you could include. We're pretty pumped about how that came out. And I want to get that in front of as many people as possible, because we want to do a lot more stuff like that. That's really exciting coming up. So, yeah.
Cool. And if you love this podcast, make sure to tell your friends, tell your followers, anyone that you love it, because that's how Joel and I keep our content going, is by tagging us, letting us know that you're enjoying it. All right, y'all. Well, we will see you in the next episode. Enjoy your week, make your impossible list, and start achieving more. We'll see you guys later. The Legacies podcast is a production of 99 in St. Clair and is currently recorded in Austin, Texas. If you'd like to be a guest on our show or learn more about how to get involved, visit www.99stclair.com/podcast for more information. As always, thanks for listening.